Now, last weekend, thousands of people took to the streets to celebrate Dublin Pride. And this weekend in the capital, Trans Pride is taking place later on this afternoon. And my next guest is someone who has been on their own trans journey and is here to have a chat. Denise Breen, you're very welcome to the studio.
Good morning, Susan. How are you?
Now, Denise, we might give listeners some context to this conversation because it's probably worth pointing out that in a different world, in a different time, we knew each other professionally and you were known on a different name back then.
That's true. That's very true. And so, yeah, no strangers to the microphones. And lovely to see you.
And lovely to see you.
And great for acknowledging the past we have together. Because that's one of the things that some trans people try to do is kind of erase their past, you know. And I've never done that because, you know, I won't say how old I am, but I'm on the wrong side of 50. OK. And I have to acknowledge that, yeah, it's been a long journey. It's been a long road from when I was born to get to here, struggles along the way, wonderful things happening along the way. And so, yeah, we all have a past and we have to recognise that that makes us who we are today.
Absolutely. It's all part of the bigger picture. Let's go right back. Let's maybe talk about childhood, teenage years, early 20s. Tell me what life was like, because I know, you know, you always felt you were in the wrong body, to put it that way. Tell us a little bit about some of the emotions involved in that, because that, I think, sometimes is what maybe people don't understand or find it hard to understand.
Yeah, it is difficult to understand. And I suppose when I was growing up, we're talking kind of pre-internet stage, you know, it just didn't exist. So there was nowhere really to get information. Information or resources. And so when I was growing up, I grew up on the north side of Dublin, and the only place I ever saw any reference to transsexual was the term that was used back then. And some people still use that term. It has grown out of favour. But the only thing I saw back then was what I saw in UK tabloids. As a teenager growing up, you would see, you know, splashed across the red tops in the UK, so-and-so has had a sex change, you know. And it was always salacious, lurid. It was that thing. And when I realised, well, I suppose it took a long time to realise what I was inside and who I was inside. But growing up, when you see that, it's almost like a thing of shame. You don't want to be that. You don't want to bring that shame on yourself. You don't want to bring that shame on your family. So growing up, that was kind of one of the main sources of where you saw people who might be like you. Okay. The other place, and it's interesting because the Late Late Show celebrates its anniversary today. It was first broadcast this day, 1960 something. And that was another place where I first saw a transsexual person. Gay Byrne interviewed somebody there. And I think I was about, I'll probably get the years, the dates wrong, but I was probably about, you know, 10 or 11 or 12.
And did it mean anything then, even at that young age?
It did. It did. It kind of, I had
resonated.
A strange fascination about it.
Okay.
I was kind of going, what is this? You know, this there's something about this that
is talking to me.
I didn't have the language. I didn't have the terminology. And language is a very important thing. We can talk about that later on. I didn't have that language, you know, but you knew inside that that resonated with you. There was something there that resonated with you. And it was, yeah, it was an awkward time, you know, like for all teenagers. I'm no different to any other teenager on the planet. You go through that awkward time wondering who you are, what's your place in the planet, what's life going to be like. And I suppose in those days, and I sound like an old person now when I say in those days, but you were kind of brought up, you know, get married, have children, have a house, a job, car. That was the pinnacle.
So any of those feelings that you had, you just thought, bury them, go along with what I'm supposed to do.
What you're supposed to do.
This is what all my peers are doing. This is what people do. They get to a certain age, they go to university, they get married, they buy a house, they do all those box-ticking things. And you went along with that.
I went along with all of that. The sad part of it is that started to affect my mental health over the years. And, you know, that got to a stage where I just had to transition. It was just, there was no choice. But yes, you do. You do all that box ticking. You do all those things that society or family expect of you. And along the way, I was kind of exploring who I was. And, you know, that would have involved, you know, cross-dressing to try and understand what it was. And I was living in the UK in the late 80s, early 90s, and there's a society there called the Beaumont Society, and I would have met with them. And I met with a lot of what would call cross-dressers or transvestites, as the terminology was then. And I kind of realised, that's not quite me. Mm. It's partly me, but it's not all of me. And because some people, it would be a fetish for some people, but it wasn't for me. And that was something that I had to explore and had to figure out, why am I different? What is it about me that's different? So much so that, you know, years later I went off and I did a degree in psychology to try and, you know, like Dr. Heal Thyself, you know, figure out what is it about me. And
I suppose you've always had a really, even when I knew you back then, really high powered job. You've always had a great job. You've travelled around, and I suppose that's opened up certain doors. You were in the States for a time as well. Tell me what the hardest thing about transitioning has been in terms of when you're bringing people into that circle. So it obviously has to start somewhere. You have to tell somebody first, then comes the next group of people, then comes maybe the work colleagues, then comes the people, you know, that you might just know to say hello to. Mm. It's obviously different degrees of people and how close they are to you. And I know you have a wife and you have grown up children. Yes. So you had a close circle that obviously had to come first.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. It's those layers, and you do that for your own support as well. Mm. So obviously my wife, Kira, would have known from a very early stage, and we would have talked about it. And you know, I'll come back to that, the hardest part of transitioning in a second. But talking and opening up to people, your close circle. I have two grown up daughters, and they would have known since they were about 16, 17, would have kind of sat them down and had that conversation.
And how
with
was
them.
That conversation?
I'm very lucky. Very lucky. They were very accepting, and. But it's scary because, you know, as you open up to people, as you tell people your innermost thoughts, your innermost fears, you are putting at risk every relationship you've ever cultivated in your whole life.
So like you're starting each relationship again, or you're testing.
Well, you're risking it.
You're testing it.
You're putting an ultimate test on every single relationship. So you're telling your children, you've having a conversation with your wife. You then start to tell your siblings. You know, spoke to my siblings, spoke to my closest friends, and all very, very accepting, I have to say. A lot of questions. People have a ton of questions. And you know, questions are great.
And that's fine, I guess.
That's absolutely fine, because people go, some people go, in fact, it's funny, the reaction from some people was, what took you so long?
Okay.
Which is kind of took me by surprise. And then other people, the news took them by surprise. And you have to help them and education and it's important, but the hardest part of transitioning, and you know, yes, there's a journey that I have to go on, and that in some ways that's kind of my journey, and I hate using that phrase journey.
No, I know,
but there's no other way to put it.
Yeah,
but it's partners, you know, and partners of trans people, I think are often the forgotten. Are the silent folks in all of this. And I think, I mean, sadly, statistically, you can see that most people, when they transition, if they're married, the marriages tend to fall apart.
Okay.
Fall away. Or indeed, legally, in some countries, and indeed, Ireland would have been like that a few years ago.
If we hadn't had the marriage referendum,
I would have had to get divorced. Mm. You know, a state-enforced divorce. Wow. So partners are very important. And for me, I always reminded people that, yes, I'm doing this. And, you know, this is me doing my thing. But don't forget, my wife is here and she needs your support almost more so, because she didn't ask for this.
She has to accept something that's kind of external in a way.
She has to question herself, you know, so it's very difficult. So I'm very, very lucky. The majority of my family have been accepting. Work have been fantastic. It's funny. When I spoke to HR, I had a very public kind of coming out. I just kind of said one evening on Facebook, that's it.
You ripped the plaster off.
And I'm kind of like that. If I want to do something, I'm just going to do it. Mm. And I remember ringing HR the next day going, look, and I've done this and I want to transition in work now. And they went, okay, well, we've someone else in work has done this. And we have the 6-month program where we talk to, you know, and it leads up to an email from the CEO who goes,
yeah.
I went, no. We're doing this tomorrow.
They're like scrambling everyone in HR.
So it was fine. And you know, on LinkedIn and other kind of professional media, the response has been terrific. And
the response from the close people like your wife and your children, which I guess is the most important, that has been very positive for you as well.
Yeah.
In terms of the practicalities then, Denise, talk to me about that, because that's, I suppose, some of the emotions involved in it. But obviously there's practicalities to do with changing your name and passports and all of that sort of stuff. How hard is that stuff?
That stuff, thankfully, in Ireland, doing that is fairly straightforward these days. So to change your name is just a deed poll. Anyone can do it. You can walk into your local solicitor and fill out a deed poll form, say what your old name was, what your new name would like to be. You sign it. And from the moment you sign that form, that's your new name, legally. So I had done that. In order to get what's called a gender recognition certificate here in Ireland, and thankfully we had the Gender Recognition Act in 2015, one of the first countries to do that. And so Ireland, from a legal perspective, is quite progressive in that regards. And you take your deed poll, you register it with the court here in Ireland, the Four Courts, so it gets registered. You send that off to the Department of Social Protection, and hey presto, it comes back. You have a gender recognition certificate. And I have to say, the machinations or the machinery of the state kind of clicks in, and it works very well.
It works.
It works really well. So you get a new social protection card, automatically comes in the post with your new name and everything. Because I'm on the wrong side of 50, next thing I know, I have a letter for breast check coming in the post. So it was amazing and kind of wonderful that the state supports people as they do.
So you're talking there about like practicalities and how, you know, Ireland is progressive in terms of our, I guess, the practicalities of doing all that. Let's talk about people's attitudes maybe, because the reason I really wanted to talk to you this weekend was because there was a lot of talk in the start of the week in relation to gender neutral toilets. And, you know, this comes up all the time. And this was based on a story about secondary schools looking for planning permission to include gender neutral toilets. There was a similar story a couple of weeks ago about boys being able to wear skirts to school.
So this is
gender neutral. Yeah. Yeah. So this comes up a lot. And every time we have this conversation, to me, it seems that we have a hell of a long way to go when it comes to getting rid of transphobia in Ireland. And I think we have come so far when it comes to gay and lesbian people. I think when you saw Pride last weekend, I think there's a massive swell of support between marriage equality referendum, all of those things. I think, you know, we are on board now with all of that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the trans community, I think we have a long way to go. And I would fear that in 10 years' time, we might look back at the way we're treating trans people now in the same way as we look back on the way gay and lesbian people were treated 10, 20 years ago, when somebody could have said to you, oh, you're gay, well, I'll cure you from that. Like that kind of mentality.
Yeah,
I think there still is some suspicion, and there still is some people who think being transgender is some sort of a lifestyle choice. I do think that we haven't moved that far.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Would you agree with that?
So there's a lot to unpack in what you've said there. So taking some of that, yes, I would agree that trans rights are probably 20, 25 years behind where gay and lesbian rights were. And when you hear some of the conversations that are being had today about trans people and trans rights, they echo the conversations that were held 20, 25 years ago.
Agree. I totally agree with that.
Gay rights. And I think a lot of the fears are similar. People think, you know, what about the children? You hear this, what about the children? And those fears have proved to be unfounded. And I think you're right. People will look back in a few years' time and go, what was all the fuss about? You know, I think for me, focusing on, you're right, Ireland has come such a long way. We still have a long way to go. I mean, the theme of the Trans Pride March, which is happening today, is break the binary. Because when I transitioned, so some people transition from female to male or from male to female, but some people don't identify as either. They identify as non-binary. And we still have to address that in Ireland from a legal perspective and from a social perspective. So that still doesn't exist. Some countries have done that, where you can have an X, say, on your passport or your driver's license. You don't have to have M or F. So we still have a long way to go with that. Gender-neutral toilets, I won't get too far into this because lots of people have their own opinions on this. We all have them at home. is the key. We've all grown up with gender neutral toilets, and I think if people just stop for a moment, you know, and if we allow the what I call, or we used to call in psychology, the moral panic to die down a little bit, and people would realise, hey, it's not a big deal. And anecdotally, as someone who has used male toilets and female toilets, female toilets are worse than male toilets.
So women have nothing to fear.
Women have nothing to fear.
I do want to have a quick word with you, because we'll run out of time. But in relation to transgender healthcare, because this is something I've spoken to a couple of parents before with children who are transitioning. And it's a big issue for them in terms of there just being a lack of doctors that specialise in this area, long waiting lists. And while this is obviously a medical requirement, the massive impact that can have on somebody's mental health. So in terms of depression, in terms of anxiety, and in terms of forcing somebody to have to wait a huge amount of time when they really feel like they can't.
Yeah.
What's your take on how we're doing when it comes to transgender healthcare?
Sadly, our record on that is not fantastic. You know, it was a great achievement or a great recognition when the World Health Organization last month said that, you know, being having a gender identity issue is not a mental disorder anymore, which is fantastic. We all knew that. And so we're campaigning for, as part of TENI, the Transgender Equality Network Ireland, where I'm a board member, and we are advocating and working with government agencies to try and bring that model of healthcare that we see in other countries, successfully implemented in other countries, here to Ireland, and working with all the health partners across the country to do that. But you're so right. It does affect the mental health of so many people. In terms of progression, we have the review of the Gender Recognition Act, which is working its way through the IRCTIS at the moment. And hopefully that will work its way through very quickly. And we'll see people younger than 18 years of age, 16 and 17 year olds, being able to you know, change names, change their gender recognition. So that's all positive. But we do have a lot of work to do on healthcare. We are still, I remember with the repeal debate, you know, the Minister for Health saying, you know, we should stop exporting our healthcare problems. When it comes to trans healthcare, we are still exporting our trans healthcare problems. You know, there's nowhere you can get gender confirmation surgery in Ireland. You can get top surgery for trans men, but the person who's doing that has such a long waiting list that people go abroad to do that. You know, when I came back from working in California a couple of years ago, I joined the public system to try and get an appointment for hormone therapy. The waiting list was 23 months.
Yeah, it's really, really long.
And that's a long time. A long, long time.
You're a year, more than a year, year and a half on ripping that plaster off, as you said. Tell me what is the biggest difference, I suppose, to how Denise is living her life now to before?
It's wonderful. You know, it's being living authentically. You know, we hear the phrase bringing your whole self to work. You know, bringing your whole self to life is just so amazing. People talk about how much happier I am now, and I do feel a lot happier. I don't have that struggle inside anymore. You know, transitioning is hard, but not transitioning is even harder.
Absolutely. Well, loads of texts in here. Fair dues to Denise. It takes a lot of bravery to be yourself in a world that sometimes wants you to fit into a certain category and keep your mouth shut. That came in from Jim in Galway. And nice to hear the human story behind trans pride. It's so easy to dehumanise people when we rely on labels and stigma. And that came in from Aisling in Wicklow. And trans pride, as we said, is starting at midday today at the Garden of Remembrance. Denise Breen, it was a pleasure to have you in to News Talk Breakfast. Thanks so much for coming into us this morning.